My name's Paul Tolley, and I am absolutely delighted to be introducing our next guest. Our next guest is Thomas Mayo, a Torres Strait Islander man, Wharfian Darwin on Larrakia Country, author, including writer of children's books, involved with the Uluru Statement from the Heart. Good morning, Thomas.
Good morning, Paul.
Lovely to hear you there. Would you like to do a little more of an introduction to yourself, perhaps with a little more background detail?
Grew up on Larrakia Country in Darwin. As you said, I was a wharfie. I did that work for 16 years. Became a union official of the MUA in 2010, and then got involved in the process that led to the making of the Uluru Statement from the Heart. I'd worked on advocating for improving the lives of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people for some time leading up to that, and realised that we just weren't getting enough change. There were terrible decisions being made that were harmful, making things worse. The gap was widening. And so when the Uluru Statement was made, calling for a constitutionally enshrined voice, I knew it was an important step forward in improving Indigenous people's lives, and important for our country as well to recognise our Indigenous heritage and culture rather than to continue to ignore it. And so for 6 years now, I've been working hard to help Australians to understand how important it is, and in around 6 weeks' time, maybe, there'll be an announcement tomorrow about the date, we will be voting yes or no to accepting the invitation to recognise us through a voice.
Thomas, can I take you back to the beginning of that? How did you become involved with the statement? I know you were at the Uluru conference. Did your elders ask you? I've spoken to people whose elders asked them to be part of that. Was that the process for you, or was it through the union? How did that happen?
Well, as an advocate, you know, in our community for improving things around, you know, housing and employment and education, justice for Indigenous people, I was at the Darwin Dialogue. That was one of 13 regional dialogues that led to the Uluru Convention that endorsed the Uluru Statement, made that consensus. And Uncle Jack R. Kitt, one of the great leaders of our people, he's since passed away, but he nominated me and I was elected by the local community, really, the local Indigenous community. Around Darwin to go to Uluru and be a part of that historic moment.
Yes, I've actually met him as well. So you then crisscrossed this country with the actual Uluru Statement from the Heart, speaking with and listening to people, both are, of course, incredibly important. I first met you, I think, early in those travels in Alice Springs, and the statement is beautiful to look at and beautifully described, I think, as an invitation to listen. Wonderful, wonderful description. Would you be prepared to recite it for us? Because a lot of people perhaps won't have read it.
Yeah, sure, Paul, I can do that. Do you want me to do it now?
Yes.
Okay, it goes like this. We gathered at the 2017 National Constitutional Convention, coming from all points of the southern sky, make this statement from the heart. Our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes are the first sovereign nations of the Australian continent and its adjacent islands, and possessed it under our own laws and customs. This our ancestors did according to the reckoning of our culture from the creation, according to the common law from time immemorial, and according to science more than 60,000 years ago. This sovereignty is a spiritual nation, the ancestral tie between the land or Mother Nature and the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who were born therefrom, remain attached thereto, and must one day return thither to be united with our ancestors. This link is the basis of the ownership of the soil, or better, of sovereignty. It has never been ceded or extinguished, and it coexists with the sovereignty of the Crown. How could it be otherwise? That a people's possessed a land for 60 millennia and this sacred link should disappear from world history in merely the last 200 years? With substantive constitutional change and structural reform, we believe this ancient sovereignty can shine through as a fuller expression of Australia's nationhood. Proportionately, we are the most incarcerated people on the planet. We are not an innately criminal people. Our children are alien from their families at unprecedented rates. This cannot be because we have no love for them. And our youth languish in detention in obscene numbers. They should be our hope for the future. These dimensions of our crisis tell plainly the structural nature of our problem. This is the torment of our powerlessness. We seek constitutional reforms to empower our people and take a rightful place in our own country. When we have power over our destiny, our children will flourish, they will walk in two worlds, and their culture will be a gift to their country. We call for the establishment of a First Nation voice enshrined in the Constitution. Makarrata is the culmination of our agenda, the coming together after a struggle. It captures our aspirations for a fair and truthful relationship with the people of Australia and a better future for our children based on justice and self-determination. We seek a Makarrata Commission to supervise the process of agreement-making between governments and First Nations and truth-telling about our history. In 1967, we were counted. In 2017, we seek to be heard. We leave base camp and start our trek across this vast country. We invite you to walk with us in a movement of the Australian people for a better future.
Beautiful words, Thomas, and thank you very much. And it's always struck me when I read that the expressions of aspiration and the voice around our children, our young people, etc., are very much those that white fellas have. It also speaks to the shared desire of people, doesn't it?
Well, we're not different. I think that's the main point, is in we're not different in our humanity, that the challenges that we face, the gap in life expectancy of almost 10 years, that we have twice the rate of suicide rates, that we have, that we have rheumatic heart disease in our communities, you know, a third world sort of disease that doesn't exist anywhere else but Aboriginal communities. We have all of these, issues. And really the point, one point that the Uluru Statement makes really strongly is that, you know, this cannot be because we don't love our children. It cannot be because we're born with more criminal intent that almost all of the time, 100% of the children in youth detention in the Northern Territory are Indigenous. There must be a structural and political problem that we can address together as Australians. And the key to it is ensuring that Indigenous people can have a say, a voice about the decisions that are being made about us. It's a failure in policies and law, harmful laws that cause those issues. And a voice is key to seeing, better decisions made about us. We want that responsibility. We always have. And so the Uluru Statement calls for that agency, something that should be appeal to every Australian sense of fairness, that the people that have decisions made about them should be listened to.
And I guess in your mind that what you've just said is really the importance of the voice and then the importance of a yes vote?
That's right. So, we've worked really hard since, as you would have heard in the Uluru Statement, it first came about in 2017. We've worked hard to reach this point in time where we have a government that is willing to put the invitation to the Australian people in a referendum. And what we're answering, the question that we're answering at this referendum, is simply, yes or no. Do we recognise our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people as the first peoples in our constitution, which I think most Australians would agree should have happened long ago? And do we do it in a practical way? In a way that gives Indigenous people the opportunity to help the government and the parliament to make better policies and laws that will improve our lives in health, education, employment, and all those things. And I think, as I mentioned, I believe that Australians understand fairness. And I think when they see that they've got nothing to lose, because there's fear-mongering out there, people are being told they're going to lose their backyard.
Yes, I will get to that.
You know, Indigenous people are going to have too much power. Well, actually, have a look at the words that will go into the Constitution should we vote yes. It's just an advisory body, the ability to make representations. As I said, the ability to be heard. Why would we say no to that? You know, nobody loses anything. But we can gain the opportunity, you know, the ability to close the gap and to embrace this wonderful culture and heritage that has been ignored for too long.
So what are the actual constitutional changes that are proposed?
Well, I can almost say it word for word. I'm not as well practiced as the Uluru Statement. But the actual change is 92 words. And it's a new Chapter 9 of the Constitution, Section 129, and it goes like this. In recognition of Aboriginal and Torres Strait peoples as the first peoples of Australia, one, there shall be a body to be called the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Voice. Two, the voice may make representations on matters, may make representations to the Parliament and the Executive Government on matters relating to Indigenous peoples. And three, the Parliament shall decide all matters relating to the voice, including the composition, powers, functions and procedures of the voice.
And, so, and I think there's two things in there which are being lost in the no case. One is it doesn't say will make representations, it says may, which is an empowering statement. So it says that First Nations people may around the issues that are important to them. And the other one is it says the government still hold the final decision.
That's right. So may make representations. I mean, Indigenous people don't want to be commenting on every little aspect that affects our lives. We want to be focusing in on the policies and laws that can improve health and education and employment and those types of things. So we may make representations. It also means that the government doesn't need, you know, there's not a requirement for them to get advice from us before they make any decision. So the argument from the No campaign that this is going to clog up, you know, the High Court, that it's going to slow the wheels of decision-making in government is absolute rubbish. And as you said, that third point reinforces that the Parliament still decides all things, including how the voice is able to give advice, you know, composition, functions, procedures. You know, so nothing changes other than Indigenous people having the ability to give advice. That's what we're voting yes or no to.
There's another statement, of course, that is being made by many, and that is that we should have legislative change rather than constitutional change. Why is constitutional change so important?
Look, it's absolutely vital because we have learnt from over 100 years of establishing voices as Indigenous people, so representative bodies, you know, from the Australian Aboriginal Progressive Association in the 20s all the way to the First Peoples Congress. You know, in more recent times, that any voice that we establish is always silenced by the next government that comes along. And so if we were to just legislate a voice, we know that, say, the Albanese government might legislate it, then when they lose power, the next government that will come along will silence it. And so that's wasteful. You know, we don't want to see waste in programs or policies or representative bodies. We want to see improvements. We want to see consistency. We want to see efficiency. And so we need to constitutionally enshrine it so that it can, you know, so that it can continue to give advice to the Parliament and the government, even when they don't want to listen to us, the Australian people, through the referendum and this constitutional change, will set up the expectation that a parliament that makes decisions about Indigenous people should give them the opportunity to have a say about that decision.
I remember talking with Mr. Shaw in Alice Springs, one of the early ATSIC commissioners, and he made a very similar point to me. He said, look, ATSIC was not perfect. It, like many institutions, human institutions are not perfect, but he made the point that it was always at the whim of a government.
Yeah, that's right. And Australians were led to believe that you know, we are incapable of having a representative body. But like the Uluru statement makes the point on, you know, incarceration and health and things, you know, we're human like everyone else. We're capable of making representations to improve our lives. We're capable of taking responsibility for these things. But we, unlike other Australians, we actually need the Australian people to support that, because, you know, you just cannot ignore that history of our lives being used as a political football, and this, you know, this chopping and changing of policies and representation.
Is Treaty First, as some, including some First Nations people, calling for, a distraction to the Yes case? Does it have some merit as a suggestion?
Look, no, it doesn't have any merit, because the states have already undertaken that work. You know, Victoria is 10 years in. In Queensland, there was bipartisan support for treaty legislation recently. Both the Liberals and Labor have commenced that process there. In Tasmania, it's the Liberal government and state government, and they've entered the treaty process. So, you know, it's a bit of a nonsense, really, to say that treaty should come first. You know, it's underway. It's going to take a very long time because, you know, it's so complex, 200 years after first contact. But the focus, really, this referendum is about representation, and it's about improving health, education, employment, all those things that are important in our communities.
Yes, and I have to agree with you. It's an absolute nonsense to suggest that the Voice will be talking about banking legislation and, as you say, clogging up the High Court.
Well, the Voice can force anything on, even a treaty. Mm. You know, a treaty is an agreement between the government and, you know, Indigenous groups in that area. The Voice can't force anything. It can give advice. You know, nobody is going to lose anything, and they're being, you know, really, Australians are being taken for mugs by the No campaign that are saying things like that.
Well, I keep my eye on this fairly closely as well, and I do note that the Yes case tends to speak about the need for a voice and the changes proceed that would proposed and proceed from that, and that the No case tends to talk about everything and anything but the substantive issues.
That's right, yeah. It's a very dishonest campaign, but I believe that Australians, you know, are smart, you know, we're intelligent, we're compassionate, empathetic and fair. And, you know, so we're working really hard in this campaign now. It might only be 6 weeks. We'll know a date tomorrow of when the referendum will be held, but it's not far off. And so I say to any supporters that are listening, or those that have become supporters after listening to the explanation and learning that they're not going to lose anything, but actually going to gain, you know, this to share over 60,000 years of heritage and culture as part of who we are, you know, and the ability to close this gap that is really shameful for us in the world, you know, to get behind this, to help other Australians understand this. And as I said, people would vote yes when they understand how fair and safe this is and meaningful.
I notice that some people, including First Nations people such as Jacinta Price and Warren Mundine, are saying that the Voice will divide us and not bring us together. What's your view on that? Do you think that the Voice will strengthen our democracy and therefore our country?
Well, Indigenous people are not included in the Constitution right now, and the Constitution has specifically excluded Indigenous people, and Indigenous people are still subject to the race power in the Constitution. Special laws are made about us. So, you know, this isn't about dividing us. This is about including us. We already have, you know, the gap that I talked about, you know, this terrible disparity in outcomes, you know, that divides us. You know, and this is about closing that gap. This is about seeing equal outcomes. And, you know, the Voice isn't a special right, but it's a measure that we can take to ensure that better decisions are made, to include us in decisions. So in every way, this is a unifying thing. This is something that will strengthen our democracy, that'll, you know, really be a proud moment, I think, when we achieve it.
Thomas, I think to just be heard is so terribly important, not only for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, but for all people, even for children, we hear it a lot as a statement when we read and hear about sexual abuse and people who have been sexually abused saying, just to have been heard, forget about the content, just to have been heard was so empowering and so important. So I'd like to thank you very, very much on behalf of us all for the work that you are doing, including, I'm sure, a lot of time away from your family.
A lot of time, yeah. I miss my family back in Darwin.
I'm sure. Look, thank you so much for the work you're doing on behalf of all Australia and for myself. And thank you very much for talking with us today. My guest has been Thomas Mayo, a Torres Strait Islander man who's been travelling this country for some years, talking about the voice and particularly the Uluru Statement of the Heart, showing people the actual statement as I experienced in Alice Springs and working. Thomas, thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Paul. A pleasure.